Given our limited amount of time, why don't we just see an overview of what it is we're going to start next week. First, about the lab, we are going to start the lab that was listed for this past Wednesday on Monday. So you notice there are the four related labs, and it's actually a multi-step synthesis, which is the synthesis of a dipeptide, which is a protein unit that is made up of two individual amino acid residues. So our lab lecture on Monday is going to be about how can you take two different amino acids, both of which are bifunctional. You know, you could, in theory, react one amino acid with the other amino acid in one way, or you could flip the molecules around, or maybe one molecule just reacts with another instance of itself. So we're going to learn how can we control that kind of reaction to assemble protein chains. That'll be for lab. For lecture, we're going to tackle amino acids themselves, a little bit about their identification, or if you have a protein, how you could figure out how many of what kind of amino acids you have in that protein. So since we don't have a time to really get much into any one topic, let me just show you the type of compounds that we're going to be dealing with. Because I'm using the term amino acids, but this is actually a subset known as alpha amino acids, the same kind of alpha we were talking about when we talked about alpha protons. And this is the simplest of all of them, which is glycine, which is related to glycerol. No, it's not, because it's only got two carbons. That's still the simplest amino acid. Notice that it has no stereocenter to it. All the other common amino acids, which your book gives you the classic 20 that I learned when I was a high school biology student, there are more than that 20 common amino acids now, depending on what kind of critter you are. If any of you have ever heard the term extremophile, that means an organism that either prefers to or can only exist in what otherwise are conditions that most other life on the planet can't tolerate. So, for example, there's some hot spring somewhere that's got an awfully high sulfur and selenium content. So there are some versions of amino acids that have been substituted with sulfur. Or there's even one, I think that's the theoretical 23rd, that has selenium in it instead. But we're just going to be limiting to ourselves to these classic 20 amino acids, which have this kind of structure to it. So you still have that alpha amino group, but then you have an R group that's attached as well. And so these 20 amino acids are classified into, I think it was 8 categories in your text, as to whether the R group is just an alkyl group or something with an alcohol, or a thiol, or another carboxylic acid, or maybe an amine, or maybe something aromatic, or maybe it's a heterocycle. So there's those various class of amino acids, which, yes, you will need to memorize, as I am going to be as well. So let me just show you one of the remaining amino acids, because we've got the simplest, the first one here for you. Yes? I was just going to get to that, and let me give you a real-life amino acid for us to discuss further then. The second simplest amino acid that does have a methyl group, and this is alanine. Now, before I label which kind of alanine this is, because there is a labeling system just like we had for carbohydrates, let's make a Fischer projection for this compound. And I will just tell you that you had enough Fischer projections today, haven't you? Fischer projection of the compound, we put the carbonyl up the top the same way that we did for carbohydrates. Let's say that I fix my viewpoint down underneath the molecule here so that the methyl group is pointed towards me, which it should be if it's going to be one of the sidearms. So what I mean by that is I'm going to make the amino the bottom part of the molecule as I'm making the carboxylic acid the top part of the molecule. So if I'm visualizing it in that manner, should the methyl group be to the left or the right of the Fischer projection?
Right.
To the right, because if I'm looking up And the carboxylic acid group is up here. The amino group is down here relative to me. If that is a dash, that means it's going into the plane of the board, which from my perspective means it is on the
right.
Okay.
This is not actually, though, the standard way to write it. You might think, well, why did you do it then? It's because there's going to be many instances in which it's more convenient for us to write the NH2 group in the plane of the paper than to put it at the dash wedge position. There'll be other times where it's easier to put the alkyl group in the plane of the paper, which is going to force the amino group into the dash wedge position. Question?
You forgot to put CH3 there.
I don't have to.
Yes.
This time I didn't forget. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to rotate this around to put this in the standard way that amino acids are represented. So this is just a redraw. It's not changing the molecule at all. So the methyl group is going to end up at the bottom. Hydrogen that was on the left is now on the right. The amino that was on the bottom is now on the left. Because it is on the left-hand side, this is called an L amino acid. So this is L-alanine. The D label would be the enantiomer. Since this only has one stereocenter to it, then it means it's going to be a wedge instead of the dash. Again, if we are writing the amino group itself in the plane of the paper. So these sugars are the ones that are biologically active. L amino acids are the ones that are biologically active. So there's your first two amino acids. Again, the simplest one, no stereocenter. The next simplest one, add one carbon to it, which means we've now generated a stereocenter. All the rest of the amino acids have a stereocenter to them. Most of the rest of the amino acids are like this, where if you're focusing on the amino group, you would call it a primary amine. There is one and only one of the common amino acids, which is a secondary amine. So ignoring stereochemistry just temporarily. Here's the structure of that compound, proline. Now, what are we going to do in terms of lecture? Because in lab, I said we're going to work on learning how to put different amino acid units together. So in lecture, we're going to focus on structure. So we'll review these different classes of amino acids. That's why we did all that review of acids and bases. Why do we need to know these classes and what does it have to do with acids and bases? Because we're going to talk about something called the isoelectric point, which is when you have the maximum amount of the neutral or tetraionic form of an amino acid. Why do we care about that? Because if we're trying to analyze proteins, we need to be able to separate amino acids. And one of the ways that we can separate them is to take advantage of their slightly varying acid-base behavior. So we're going to talk about column chromatography. And more specifically, we're going to talk about ion exchange chromatography. And along with that, the compound ninhydrin. So in column chromatography, what you do is you load a separation material. For example, silica gel, which is the same stuff that's on a TLC plate, except you have a whole lot more of it. You take a sample, push it through that gel, either by polarity, which would be a normal column, or by ions interacting, which is what goes on this ion exchange column. Some of the amino acids get held back. They linger longer on that column, so they come off at different times. Then if you react it with an anhydrine, you're actually able to visualize them one. But if you're doing a spectroscopic analysis using Beer's law, that's the first time since 1B since you've heard that, you could calculate the concentration of amino acids coming off, which as long as everything's standardized, that means that given X amount of a protein, you can figure out what percentage of the various amino acids are in it. Now, that could tell you the type, but not the order. So eventually we're going to talk about sequencing. Let's see. And then in lab, remember, even though it's a lecture topic, we'll discuss it in lab, which is polypeptide synthesis. Once we've gotten through all of those topics, then we're going to step back a little bit and look at these polypeptide chains, which are otherwise known as proteins. Now, this is not a biochemistry course. I have not been trained in biochemistry, so we're not going to be learning the top 100 proteins and what they do in the body. We'll just be learning a little bit about protein structure and maybe a quick discussion of some of the more well-known proteins that might be used as examples in your chapter. Yes? I'm not sure, but it's back into the standard text. We're back in, so whatever lab it is that's listed, which here, let me look at the name. It is the first of those polypeptide labs, which is the N protection of L-alanine. So in fact, what we're going to be talking about first in lab is protecting group strategies with amino acids. And so the nitrogen end, sometimes called the nitrogen terminal or terminus, sometimes called the amino terminus, we're going to do that protection as the first lab on Monday. So that's kind of an overview of the chapter. As far as what's the immediate thing you need to start reading in the amino acid chapter, start reading about the structures of amino acids so you can start memorizing your amino acids. Read over this isoelectric point because that'll be the first thing we do in lecture. And then read about the peptide synthesis because that'll be the first thing we do in lab. Yes? That is the pre-lab, to do the first lab of this polypeptide synthesis. So whatever's listed in the syllabus for Monday, do that pre-lab.